Proudly supporting WHYY is New Jersey's Clean Energy Program, educating businesses, local governments, schools, and residents how to integrate energy-efficient and renewable technologies into their new construction projects, existing building upgrades, and new equipment installation. More information about modernizing facilities with assistance from New Jersey's Clean Energy Program at njcleanenergy.com/WHYY.
I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Ahead, Americans show signs of optimism on the economy. But first, Philadelphia-based Comcast has officially killed its $45 billion plan to merge with Time Warner Cable. The announcement came after regulators indicated the deal would hand Comcast too much power in the internet broadband market. Analyst Harold Feld of the consumer advocacy group Public Knowledge says Comcast has grown enormous from these kinds of acquisitions, and every time, he says, it pays for the deals by raising prices on customers.
You know, when you have two companies that suck and you put them together, it's not like they suck less, they suck more. And in fact, it's exponential, so it becomes suckage squared.
Joining us now is Kevin Werbeck, Associate Professor of Legal Studies and Business Ethics at Wharton. Hello, Kevin.
Hello.
So if the acquisition had been successful, it would have affected an enormous number of Americans.
Well, this is the largest cable company, potentially buying the second largest cable company and creating by far the largest broadband access provider in the U.S. So certainly it would have affected a large number of Americans directly as customers of these two companies, but in terms of shaping the marketplace for all these services, it would have an effect that in some ways reaches all Americans. On the other hand, this deal gets terminated, the companies walk away. It's not that anything is radically different in the marketplace than it was before. Comcast is still the largest provider of those services. It's still in a very strong market position today. So I think that the deal certainly was very important. There were certainly legitimate reasons for concern, but I don't think we'll see dramatic shifts as a result of the deal falling apart.
If the acquisition had proceeded, how would this have affected those who provide online content and streaming services? If you could get into that a little bit for us.
Well, the companies that provide things like online video streaming were concerned that a merged Comcast Time Warner would have too much power. They would demand too high a price potentially, or they would, in a case like cable, where the money flows to the content providers, that they would pay too little for access to the programming. There also was concern that what we're seeing is finally the rise of what's called over-the-top video, where you no longer necessarily need to buy the full cable package of hundreds of channels, even if you don't use them, that we're moving to more of a world where if you want HBO content online, you pay for a service like HBO Go. If you want sports content, maybe you'll pay for that. And the concern was that a more powerful Comcast Time Warner would have a stronger ability to stand in the way of that kind of transition happening in the market.
Do you see anything else like this on the horizon, any other potential mergers of this magnitude?
We may not see anything quite of this scale because we've already had so much consolidation in the network markets that there really are only a few very large companies left, and most of them are not in situations where it would make sense for them as a business to combine, or there are situations like, for example, when AT&T tried to buy T-Mobile, where they do run afoul of antitrust concerns.
Okay. Kevin Werbeck, Associate Professor of Legal Studies and Business Ethics at Wharton, thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Joining us now is Heather Lamar, Assistant Professor at Temple University School of Media and Communication. Hello, Heather.
Hi, how are you?
Well, so first, of great concern was how a merger between the two largest cable giants in this country would have affected the public. If the merger had gone through, what would have been the ramifications, in your opinion?
Well, I think the biggest concern for people would be that the continued consolidation limits access or freedom of choice, especially to streaming technologies and shows that are exclusively streamed nowadays, which is very important in the under 30 market. And then again, of course, rising prices. But I think limited access and rising prices There's also a secondary concern with customer service issues because Comcast and Time Warner have sort of been plagued with bad customer service reputations for the last several years anyway.
Heather, in your bio, it says you're interested in the role emergent and alternative media play in shaping attitudes, opinions, and behaviors in the public. If you were to have such a giant entity controlling access to the Internet, for I've read as much as 40% of the public, how does that shape the accessibility of alternative media?
Well, it could go either way, right? It just depends on what the business strategy becomes. The biggest threat is that it would increase access to media that Comcast either has a financial interest in or has some kind of a political interest in, or even a socio-political interest in. The other way it could go, though, is that it could create all kinds of opportunities for new content creation. I think, though, that history has shown us that these large mergers and these acquisitions and just the overall movement to conglomerate media, it has actually hurt access in ways that aren't necessarily customer-friendly and go against sort of the whole entire idea of open access in the Internet age.
Okay. Thank you so much, Heather Lamar, Assistant Professor at Temple University School of Media and Communication. . 2015 is a big year for the set of educational benchmarks known as Common Core. New Jersey, Delaware, and 26 other states are switching to new standardized tests that are supposed to measure how well students are meeting the standards. Many are anticipating a parental backlash, and as WHYY's Avi Wolfman-Arendt reports, that's left states and districts hustling to neutralize potential discontent.
Robin Rich is a chemical engineer at DuPont and a self-proclaimed math nerd. She's cautious, analytical, thorough, and yet when it comes to Common Core...
Everything that I know is from what I've heard from, you know, friends with older kids or, you know, my nephews that are a little bit older, but that's the extent of it.
Even so, this mother of a kindergartner at Cedar Lane Early Childhood Center in Middletown, Delaware, is skeptical.
Yeah, I really hadn't heard, like... what's good about it, what's bad about it, you know, mostly just grumblings is what you hear about it, like parents are frustrated.
I caught up with Rich at a Common Core-themed information night held by the Appaquinimink School District. This event is designed precisely to mollify those frustrated parents. It includes lectures on Common Core English and math standards, as well as a chance to take a practice version of the new Common Core-aligned standardized test known as Smarter Balanced.
Give you some time to take a look at either an ELA or a mathematics third grade assessment.
Debbie Panchison, Appaquinimink's elementary curriculum director, is responsible for guiding Rich and other parents through the computerized exam.
That's a technology enhanced item right there.
Oh.
So you're going to drag it.
Okay.
Okay.
When do I get my score?
You won't get one. Aww. I'm so sorry.
That's the only reason why I'm doing this.
So it's just change. We've taken tests since we were children, and it's just a new test to measure and to give us information about how well our students are performing with this particular test in comparison to students across the country that are taking the Smarter Balanced test.
Common Core was once largely uncontroversial, but the standards have come under heavy attack over the last 2 years. According to a poll conducted by the journal Education Next, support for Common Core fell from 65% to 53% between 2013 and 2014.
This is actually pretty unusual. For almost any issue, you don't usually see these large shifts.
Michael Henderson, a researcher at Louisiana State University, helped conduct the Education Next poll. He says these new tests could amplify discontent.
When the scores come back from these tests, you will have a lot of places where students will score lower than they may have on previously used state exams, and there will likely be some negativity further attached to it if people are displeased with the results they see from the test.
And so education officials are trying to gear up. Appaquinimink received about $7,000 from the state of Delaware to run its parent information campaign. Four other districts and a charter school received similar awards. Nearby Maryland ran radio public service announcements about its new test, and New Jersey's education commissioner has written newspaper op-eds to address parent anxiety. In Appaquinimink, officials focused as much on the standards themselves as they did the test, figuring that if parents were on board with Common Core, they'd be on board with testing it.
So now let's go to where you solved your problem of 23 times 49. Would someone like to tell me the answer that you got? You may call it
in a session on Common Core Math, District Specialist Charlie Webb takes parents through a multiplication problem. She explains how in a Common Core world, students might solve this in two or three different ways. They might, for example, multiply 23 times 50 and then subtract 23 to get the same answer. The goal is for them to understand that multiplication, even when it's really tricky, is just repetitive addition and not some formula to be memorized.
Really, because all of a sudden I'm moving zeros and putting things here and moving things here, and I'm not really even sure, but just somebody told me to do it.
The parents nod and laugh, but this stuff is foreign, and they don't look totally sold. When the lesson ends, a mom with short blonde hair blurts out a confession.
I mean, I don't like to think of myself as not smart. I went to college, have a master's degree. But how do you, like, if my kid came home with this and they were trying to explain this to me, I wouldn't know how to help them.
This vague sense of confusion has been percolating ever since Delaware and other states started signing on to Common Core 5 years ago. The question now is whether teachers and officials have done enough to counterbalance the anxiety that comes with it. In the case of parent Robin Rich, the verdict is still out.
I don't necessarily think it's evil. I guess I'd like to ask the teachers, you know, why they think there's a negative stigma around Common Core.
Not necessarily evil. For Common Core backers, it's a start. From the Delaware Desk, I'm Avi Wolfman-Arendt, WHYY News.
In today's headlines, federal prosecutors have rested their case in the corruption trial of six former Philadelphia police officers. The former drug unit officers are accused of robbing dealers of large sums of drugs and cash, then lying in court to win convictions. The defense has begun its case by questioning FBI agents about the investigation. Unisys says it'll reduce its global workforce by about 8% after reporting a more than $43 million first quarter loss and seeing its stock price lose a quarter of its value since the beginning of the year. The cuts will affect about 1,800 jobs. The Pennsylvania legislature's fiscal analysis arm says Governor Tom Wolf's package of tax changes may not necessarily spare lower-income households, as Wolf's administration contends. The independent fiscal office says the changes will raise nearly $5 billion in the first full fiscal year in effect. Checking the weather, we're in for another cold night. Temperatures will fall back to the mid-30s. That's about 10 degrees below normal for this time of year. But wait for the weekend. It'll be a little bit milder, mostly sunny Saturday with a high of 63. Still ahead, how schools keep libraries open during tough times for education funding.
Sometimes principals have to be resourceful and say, who else is out there, or can we write a grant, or can we tap into somebody else?
That's coming up as NewsWorks Tonight continues.
Support for WHYY comes from the Philadelphia Speaker Series, presented by Widener University, offering its 2015-16 season of diverse ideas and world perspectives. Seven engaging evenings at the Kimmel Center with a lineup of celebrated personalities, including Leon Panetta, theoretical physicist Michio Kaku, CNN medical correspondent Sanjay Gupta, record-setting swimmer Diana Nyad, and Captain Mark Kelly and former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords. Information available at PhiladelphiaSpeakerSeries.org. Sponsored by the Haverford Trust Company.
Fox Chase Cancer Center supports WHYY. Fox Chase was recognized and highlighted among Philadelphia hospitals for safety and surgical outcomes based on a nationwide study. Surgeons at Fox Chase are fellowship trained with up to 4 years of additional training on the complex techniques of cancer surgery. Part of Temple Health, Fox Chase is committed to patient safety, world-class care, and the best outcomes, and now offers next business day appointments. Learn more at 888-FOX-CHASE or foxchase.org.
The Bucks County Designer House and Garden supports WHYY and is open for tours April 26 through May 30th at Villa De Braccia in Chalfont, PA. This distinctive Mediterranean-style villa with extensive use of tile, marble, and the charm of Italy will be transformed by 30 professional designers. Proceeds benefit Doylestown Hospital and the mission of the VIA. To learn more, buckscountydesignerhouse.org or 215-345-2191.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan, in for Dave Heller. When you ask Americans about their biggest concerns, economic uncertainty is typically at or near the top of the list. But there's cause for optimism, as our regular host Dave Heller discusses with Gallup Poll Editor-in-Chief Frank Newport.
Hi, Frank.
Hello, Dave.
Well, Frank, how should we get at assessing the financial situation of Americans and how they perceive it's going?
Well, we see a little light at the end of the tunnel. A lot of the presidential candidates, of course, have taken up the middle class angst and the worry about not being able to get ahead as their signal theme of their campaign. But in our recent update, we found a uptick in the percent of Americans who said their personal financial situation is getting better. That's now up to 52%. Now, that doesn't sound great. But if we backtrack just to 2011, that was down less than 30% who said their personal financial situation was getting better. So this uptick to 52% shows there is some progress, and we have some other data points where we found the same thing, that Americans are actually getting a little more positive about their personal financial situation than they have been in recent years, particularly since the Great Recession, which really began to have its effect in 2008.
Frank, invoking the general term comfortable living. What percent of Americans say they have enough money to live that way?
That's the question we ask exactly. Do you have enough money to live comfortably or not? 66% of Americans say yes, two-thirds. Looking back in history, pre-recession, we had three-quarters of Americans who said they had enough money to live comfortably, so we're not back up to that point yet. Income-wise, it's kind of interesting. If you make under $30,000 a year, you certainly are less likely than anybody else to say you don't have enough money to live comfortably. But getting into that range of $30,000 or more, particularly $50,000 or more, all of a sudden a majority say yes. And if you get up to even $75,000 a year or more in income, 92% say they have enough money to live comfortably.
What's in a phrase? Recently declared Democratic presidential candidate Hillary Clinton adopts the term everyday people, in contrast to President Obama, who often refers to the middle class. And whatever you call it, what percent of Americans will put themselves in those categories?
Well, as is often the case, it depends on the choices you give people. But we experimented with this recently. We just gave people three choices and said, are you upper class, middle class, or lower class? And given those choices, 68% of Americans, over two-thirds, said I'm middle class. 28% said I'm lower class, were willing to tell an interviewer that. And a lonely 3% were willing to say they're upper class. If in different questions, as we have experimented with here, you give people the option of working class, then a lot of those middle class people will pull themselves down and say, I'm working class.
Perhaps the lonely 3% in the upper class don't worry too much about retirement, but for most Americans, how big an issue is it?
Pretty big. Less than half of non-retired Americans, you and I and others, they 48% to be specific, say they will have enough money to live comfortably when they retire. That means half of us don't think we'll have enough money to live comfortably. And some of that may reflect the kind of bombarding we're getting now from a lot of financial experts who say none of us are saving enough to really be able to get by in retirement. Pre-recession, we had about 60% who said they would have enough money to live comfortably when they retired. So we've seen a downtick in that. Americans are getting more and more worried. Here's the interesting point. Age-wise, if you're young, you're more optimistic. Over half of those under 30 say, yeah, I'll have enough money to live comfortably. But if you get closer to retirement, aging baby boomers, still working Americans between 50 and 64, that number drops all the way down to 37%.
Are we continuing to see the average age of retirement go up?
We are seeing the average age of Americans who say they want to retire coming down a little. 65 is the age now when non-retired Americans say they expect to retire. And that had been as high as 67 years and 66 years projected age of retirement just a few years ago. So Americans are actually coming down a little. We think here at Gallup that may be due to an improving economy. Maybe the slight downtick in projected age of retirement reflects the fact that more Americans think they can get by when they do retire.
Thanks, Frank.
You bet, Dave.
Frank Newport is editor-in-chief at the Gallup Poll, speaking with NewsWorks Tonight host Dave Heller. Well, April is School Libraries Month. With just 11 librarians for Philadelphia's 218 public schools, most rely on volunteers to stay open. WHYY's Kyrie Greenberg checks in to see how they do it.
Are we authors?
Yeah!
Yes!
Yeah,
so we're
going
to learn.
Kindergarteners at Lee Elementary School are listening attentively to an author read in their library. Behind the scenes, the West Philadelphia Alliance for Children, the University of Pennsylvania, and four other nonprofits maintain the library and the school's reading mentorship program. All report to Maurice Jones, a dad who works nights and volunteers every school day as Lee's home and school president.
The library is a hub for all this individual programming. All of it kind of works out of the library and extends out into the school. So library is the focal point, and without the library, then a lot of times you don't have all these things.
There are other ways to keep school libraries open. Central High School raises money each year to pay a full-time librarian. Gina Steiner, principal of Parkway Northwest High School, says it can be challenging to secure those funds year after year.
We're all sometimes hitting the same organization. Sometimes principals have to be resourceful and say, who else is out there, or can we write a grant, or can we tap into somebody else?
Parkway Northwest downsized in 2012 to share a location with Philadelphia Military Academy at Leeds. The only library programming comes from volunteer mentors who come once a week from Arcadia University. Arcadia freshman Brian Washington says it's important to support his mentee.
Like, I'm from this area. I didn't know that this school, you know, didn't have the resources at all. You know, I expected the library to at least be somewhat decent. I'm sorry, but it's not much here.
The library is also used for assemblies and as a practice space for the dance team. Steiner says the school district tries to encourage keeping libraries open, but without funding makes no demands.
Other than schools should have libraries, and that's just been a fact of what we know is good for students, there's no one saying that you have to put a library in because they know that our resources are so limited.
For Maurice Jones, the dad who coordinates the library at Lee Elementary, says just providing a space for kids to enjoy reading is worth the effort.
Most of us as adults know that if we want to read a book, we take a quiet time and sit in a quiet place and read a book. When you're in an environment that's hustle and bustle and people are coming in, and whatever it may be, you don't have time to wind down and enjoy a book. So having a quiet place like a library is very important.
For WHYY, I'm Kyrie Greenberg.
Our aspiration.
And that's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yakov and Kimberly Haas. We had help this week from Brett Rader and Alex Lewis. The news director is Eugene Song. Our engineers this week were Al Banks and Diana Martinez. Joyce Lieberman is our radio engineering supervisor. Our chief content officer is Christine Dempsey. And Chris Cetullo is WHYY's vice president of news and civic dialogue. Thanks for joining us. Have a great weekend. I'm Mary Cummings Jordan for NewsWorks Tonight.
Rather than books, our inclinations.
Mount Cuba Center supports WHYY and hosts the annual Wildflower Celebration, Sunday, April 26th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., featuring garden demonstrations, live entertainment, and native woodland wildflowers at their peak. Open to the public. Mount Cuba Center is a botanical garden located in Hockessin, Delaware that promotes the conservation of native plants. More on the Wildflower Celebration, course offerings, and visiting hours at mountcubacenter.org. That's mtcubacenter.org.
University Medical Center of Princeton proudly supports WHYY and is proud to offer minimally invasive robotic surgery with the Da Vinci surgical system, so surgeons are able to perform delicate procedures with enhanced vision, precision, and control, with the goal of providing patients with minimal pain, less scarring, and faster recovery. Learn more about robotic surgery at princetonhcs.org or at 1-888-742-7496.